The following is provided through the IAAIS Program Share Service.
Hello, and welcome to this week's World Traveler. I'm Leah Blackman with the Virginia Voice. We continue with our article from last week from earthmagazine.org, the history, science, and poetry of New England's stone walls, May 13, 2014. Through Frost and other writers and artists, Thorson says, New England learned to love its stone walls more as memorials to a lost world than they had ever been loved as fences. And with the growing appreciation of America's heritage came an increasing understanding of the walls as actual ruins of early American civilization and the awesome human achievement they represent, he says. A March 2014 study in the Journal of Archaeological Science offers a fascinating glimpse of what lies beneath the forest that now envelop many New England farms abandoned in the latter half of the 19th century. Using a laser mapping technique called LIDAR that can see landscapes even through dense forest cover, University of Connecticut geographers Catherine Johnson and William Umet conducted aerial surveys of the heavily forested areas of three southern New England towns. The researchers found remnants of a former agropolis, vast networks of roads and stone walls that had been hidden for more than a century beneath the dense cover of oak and spruce trees. Between LIDAR's ability to pull back the biological curtain of the forest and Frost pulling back the psychological curtain drawn against the pain of abandonment, Thorson muses, it would seem that science and poetry together finally allow us to actually see things that everyone knew were there all along. Through his work with the Stone Wall Initiative at the Connecticut State Museum of Natural History, Thorson says he intends to ensure that stone walls, New England's iconic landform, will continue to be seen by many generations to come. Mending Wall by Robert Frost. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that sends the frozen groundswell under it and spills the upper boulders in the sun, and makes gaps even two can pass abreast. The work of hunters is another thing. I have come after them and made repair where they have left not one stone on a stone, but they would have the rabbit out of hiding to please the yelping dogs. The gaps, I mean. No one has seen them made or heard them made, but at spring mending time we find them there. I let my neighbor know beyond the hill, and on a day we meet to walk the line and set the wall between us once again. We keep the wall between us as we go, to each the boulders that have fallen to each, and some are loaves and some so nearly balls. We have to use a spell to make them balanced. Stay where you are until our backs are turned. We wear our fingers rough with handling them. Oh, just another kind of outdoor game, one on a side. It comes to little more. There where it is, we do not need the wall. He is all pine, and I am apple orchard. My apple trees will never get across and eat the cones under his pines, I tell him. He only says, good fences make good neighbors. Spring is the mischief in me, and I wonder if I could put a notion in his head. Why do they make good neighbors? Isn't it where there are cows? But here, there are no cows. Before I built a wall, I'd ask to know what I was walling in or walling out, and to whom I was like to give offense. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that wants it down. I could say elves to him, but it's not elves exactly. and I'd rather he said it for himself. I see him there bringing a stone grasped firmly by the top in each hand, like an old stone savage armed. He moves in darkness, as it seems to me, not of woods only and the shade of trees. He will not go behind his father's saying, and he likes having thought of it so well, he says again, good fences make good neighbors. That was Mending Wall by Robert Frost. A poem by Erica Shackleton, March 28, 2024, from PoetryCircle.com. Stone Walls. I saw New England just as the summer sun set to fall over mossy stone walls, the mica glistening, walls winding through a heavy history between pines and beech trees. I saw the mountains rolling toward the sea and the sea crashing in to meet her in the hills lined with stone walls, where maple products fill roadside stalls, far enough out to see black bear gallop across roadways and chipmunks scurry and then stay, but never that far away from somebody, somebody who owns a wall of stone. Next, we go to England to learn about another famous wall. From hadrianswallcountry.co.uk, the history of the wall. A World Heritage Site since 1987, Hadrian's Wall is an astounding feat of engineering. It's the best known and the best preserved frontier of the Roman Empire. When Hadrian's men set out to construct it, they were faced with a relentlessly challenging and variable landscape to conquer. Not the fierce torrents of fast rivers, the hard rock of the wind sill, nor mile upon mile of rolling hills would defeat them. The wall is Britain's most impressive and most important Roman monument. Together with the Antoine Wall and the Upper German Rhaetian Lines, it forms part of the UNESCO World Heritage Site, Frontiers of the Roman Empire. When was the wall built? On becoming Roman Emperor in 117 AD, Hadrian set about making the empire more secure, separating Roman and barbarian territories. The most spectacular example of this is the Great Wall he ordered his army to build to define the northwest frontier of the Roman Empire. It was a gargantuan task, which he came to inspect in AD 122 while work was in progress. The wall sprawled across 73 miles from Wall's End in the east to the Solway Firth in the west. Although the curtain wall itself finished at the Solway Firth, its forts, mile castles, and turrets continued down the Cumbrian coast to Maryport, with further forts marking the miles beyond to Ravenglass. Why was it built? Hadrian visited Britain in AD 122 and, according to his biographer, writing two centuries later, was the first to build a wall 80 miles long from sea to sea to separate the Romans from the barbarians. In that way, a function, probably the chief function of the wall, was frontier control, just like modern frontier barriers. Here, the army enforced the regulations which governed access to the empire. It would appear from comments about other frontiers that people could only enter the empire at designated points and travel unarmed and under military escort to specified markets or other places. The wall would also help to prevent raiding, which we know happened on all frontiers. The purpose of the auxiliary units based in the frontier area was entirely different. It was military defense, as well as the protection and policing of the provincials. The placing of forts on the line of the wall obscure the difference between these two functions. Analysis of the location of the wall in the landscape indicates that it was not always placed in the best position if defense was the main criterion. It may also be considered that the wall formed but one part of a wider system of frontier control. Cavalry are attested at many forts on the line of the wall. To use these soldiers as frontier guards would be a waste of their skills. It is more likely that they patrolled the area to the north. Certainly, later scouting to the north of the wall is attested as well as treaties between the Romans and their northern neighbors. How did they build it? It's thought to have taken 3 legions of infantrymen from the army of Britain around 6 years to complete the wall. Each legion was around 5,000 men strong. The legionary soldiers were responsible for major construction tasks like building stone forts and bridges. Extra manpower may have been provided by soldiers from auxiliary regiments recruited from allied and conquered tribes who supported the legions in battle and garrisoned the frontier forts. The building of Hadrian's Wall was a complicated process, containing several changes of plan. The first scheme was for a wall of stone 10 Roman feet, 3 meters wide, from the River Tyne westwards for 72 kilometers to the River Irthing, and a turf rampart 20 Roman feet, 6 meters wide, for the western 45 kilometers from the Irthing to the Solway estuary. The builders made good use of local geographical features. The well-known central sector, actually only about 20 kilometers long, ran along the crags, but to the east, the wall was placed on a long ridge running eastwards to Newcastle, while to the west, the wall was often located on shorter ridges, all normally giving wide views to the north. The stone wall was probably planned to be 15 Roman feet, 4.4 meters high. It had dressed facing stones and a soft mortar, and a core of earth or clay with stones. There is some evidence that there was a wall walk and parapet along its top. In front of the wall lay a berm, normally about 20 Roman feet, 6 meters wide. In places in the eastern 7.5 kilometers of the wall, pits have been found on the berm. In one area, at least, where there were 3 rows of pits, each held 2 substantial posts, perhaps cut down tree trunks with the branches trimmed short and sharpened at their ends. In one sector, the pits were recut. Beyond the berm lay a ditch. It ran along the whole length of the wall, except where the crags or similar features rendered it unnecessary. It was probably planned to be 30 Roman feet, 9 meters wide. The material from its excavation was tipped out to the north to form a wide, low mound. At every mile along the wall was placed a gate protected by a small fortlet termed a mile castle. The mile castles were of stone on the stone wall and turf and timber on the turf sector. Most of the excavated mile castles held one building, presumably a barrack block, probably for about 8 men. 2 mile castles appear to have held 2 double-sized such buildings, suggesting a larger garrison. Some mile castles contain hearths and an oven, while in one, a staircase leading to the top of the mile castle wall has been found. Between each pair of mile castles lay 2 towers, called turrets. These were always built of stone. A platform on the ground floor was presumably the base for a stair, or, less likely, a ladder. The The primary purpose of the soldiers based in each turret was presumably observation. And therefore, there should have been a tower over the north gate of each mile castle. The placing of the door on the ground floor of the turret suggests that security was not an important concern. The first plan for Hadrian's Wall was not completed before a major change was made. At intervals of about 11.2 kilometers, a fort was placed on the wall. It would appear that wherever possible, the intention was to place the fort astride the wall, with three of its gates north of the linear barrier and one to the south. Moreover, all these gates were, unusually, double portal, with the rearward gate supplemented by two single portal side gates. The effect of this positioning was to improve the mobility of the army in the frontier area. This decision was not taken lightly, for it involved the demolition of sectors of the wall, turrets, and even a mile castle already constructed, and the infilling of lengths of ditch. While many forts in Wales and northern Britain were abandoned to provide troops for the new forts on the wall. At about the same time, another significant change was made, the construction of a great earthwork, known since the time of the venerable Bede writing in about 730 as the Ballum, behind the wall from Newcastle to Bowness on Solway. It consisted of a central ditch with a mound set back on each side. It formed a formidable obstacle and perhaps should have been seen as a Roman equivalent of barbed wire protecting the rear of the frontier zone. Now crossing the frontier was only possible at a fort where the access point, a causeway, was surmounted by a gate. The number of points where the frontier complex could be crossed was reduced from about 80 to about 16. There were further changes to the wall, but of a different character. The width of the wall was reduced from 10 Roman feet, 3 meters, to sometimes as little as 6 feet, 1.8 meters. There was also a clear decline in standards of craftsmanship, with later structures much more shoddily finished off than earlier ones. It is difficult to know when Hadrian's Wall was completed. An inscription suggests that one fort was not finished until after 128. Nearly 10 years later, the fort at Carvoran was being repaired or rebuilt, though this was not a normal wall fort. Also, before the end of Hadrian's reign, a start had been made on replacing turf wall and stone, though by this time only 8 kilometers had been built. What did the finished wall look like? Once built, Hadrian's Wall boasted 80 mile castles, numerous observation towers, and 17 larger forts. Punctuating every stretch of wall between the mile castles were two towers, so that observation points were created at every third of a mile. Constructed mainly from stone, and in parts initially from turf, the wall was 6 meters high in places and up to 3 meters deep. All along the south face of the wall, if there was no river or crag to provide extra defense, a deep ditch called the Ballum was dug. In some areas, the ballum was dug from solid rock. What was life like on the wall? The wall was an active military line for some 300 years, with regiments of men from the auxiliary army's infantry or cavalry manning each fort. Units are thought to have been 500 or 1,000 men strong. Camps of people would accompany each unit, although little is known of these communities, and they weren't permitted to settle between the wall and the ditch, or vallum, that ran along its length. These communities, called vicus, provided the best of local produce and goods from around the empire, So life was rich for soldiers with pay to spend. When the Rome gave up Britain, the wall stones were repurposed to build homes and other buildings. What can you see today? Visitors can still patrol Hadrian's Wall, which remains standing in many areas. Halstead's is one of the wall's best-preserved forts, with the foundations of a hospital, barracks, and flushable loos still visible. At Hedden on the Wall, meanwhile, a vast chunk of the frontier still stands, heading east into the busy city of Newcastle, while the ruins of the Roman bridge that traversed the wall's route across the River Irthing remain. Facts about Hadrian's Wall. Much of what is now Scotland was occupied or controlled by the Romans for over 300 years. Roman armies first invaded this area in the AD 70s, some 50 years before Hadrian's Wall was built. Hadrian's Wall itself was abandoned only 25 years after it was built, and a new turf and timber wall was constructed on the edge of the Scottish Highlands, the Antoine Wall. After another 25 years, Hadrian's Wall was reestablished as the frontier line. In the early 3rd century, the African Emperor Severus led a vast army north of Hadrian's Wall. He died in York, and his sons made a peace with local tribes, which lasted for 100 years. Many of the forts along Hadrian's Wall continued to be occupied into the 5th and 6th centuries AD, long after Roman imperial rule in Britain had ended. It's sometimes mistakenly thought that the wall marks the English-Scottish border. In fact, Northumberland, England's largest county, lies mainly north of Hadrian's Wall. The big history. Roman conquest of Britain began in earnest in AD 43, when Emperor Claudius's 4 Legion army captured the southern territories and made them part of the Roman Empire. By AD 85, the Romans had pushed northwards into what is now Scotland and defeated the northern tribes at the Battle of Mons Gropius. Following the withdrawal of one of the 4 legions assisting the Emperor Trajan in his wars with the Dacians, modern Romania, a frontier road, the Steingate, was established where the land narrows between the Tyne to the east and the Solway to the west. A line of forts was established along the Steingate, including an important base at Vindolanda. In AD 117, Emperor Hadrian came to power and determined to consolidate the Roman frontiers. Construction of Hadrian's intensely ambitious boundary probably began early in his reign, and he came to inspect the work in progress in AD 122. Building the wall took 3 legions of men at least 6 years to complete. The scale of the wall's design was epic. Hadrian's original plan set out that the wall would be made of stone or turf, that it would be a maximum 4.6 meters high and approximately 3 meters deep, and that it would cover a total of 84 miles from one sea to the other. Along the wall, each mile was marked by a mile castle or small fort, and between each pair of mile castles, 2 towers or turrets were built at every third of a mile interval. A number of extra forts on the line of the wall itself were a late addition to Hadrian's original plan, and were perhaps ordered by him when he visited in AD 122. These forts were set around 7 miles apart along the wall, straddling it where the land would allow. Where the wall finished, this network of forts continued down to Ravenglass on the Cumbrian coast. Another feature that was introduced after the original designs were completed was a 6-meter deep ditch called the Vallum. This extra defense ran parallel to the wall's southern side, protecting the Romans from a rear attack and it is still visible today along much of the route. When Hadrian died in AD 138, the new emperor, Antoninus Pius, pushed the frontier north to run between the Forth and the Clyde. However, occupation of the Antoine Wall lasted only around 25 years before the Romans returned to refurbish and restore Hadrian's Wall. They did not restore the vallum, which suggests that the area around Hadrian's Wall had been pacified by this time. Although details are scarce regarding the wall's 300-year active lifespan, historical sources suggest that frontier battles and skirmishes occurred from time to time during the late 2nd and early 3rd centuries AD, with a major uprising not long after AD 180. The Emperor Septimius Severus brought a vast army to Britain in AD 208 and campaigned far north of Hadrian's Wall. He fell ill and died in York in AD 211. His sons made a peace with the northern tribes that seems to have lasted for over 100 years. When Roman imperial rule over Britain ended in the early 5th century, many of the forts along Hadrian's Wall continued to be occupied through the 5th and into the 6th centuries AD. The fort commanders and their soldiers appear to have taken responsibility for local security. The wall seems to have survived in a reasonable state of preservation into the Elizabethan period of the 16th century, when there were even proposals to rebuild it due to the ongoing tension and conflict with Scotland and the lack of security created by the lawless border rivers. From this period, though, stone from the wall was increasingly taken and used to build houses, churches, and farms across Cumbria, Northumberland, and Tyne and Wear. In the 1800s, people interested in antiquities began to speak out and prevent this from happening. By the mid-19th century, momentum behind the drive to preserve the wall had grown, and Victorian archaeologists and historians began to contribute to an understanding of the Roman frontier that continues to grow today. That was the history of the wall. A poem about Sycamore Gap by Hadrian's Wall in Northumberland. "Your history," said the tree to the wall, "the last crumbling remains of empire." "You are the invader," replied the wall. "I am the conqueror," said the tree to the wall, "sending platoons of seeds across my territory." "I stand alone," replied the wall. "I chose this valley," said the tree to the wall, "stretching my roots under your scored foundations." "I belong here," replied the wall. "I'm growing taller," said the tree to the wall. "You're a lonely stone sentry outstripped by a sapling." "I remain," replied the wall. "I am a survivor," said the tree to the wall. "I host the resurrection of each turning season." "I endure," replied the wall. "You're the one they blame," said the tree to the wall. "Insensate barrier, stone death to the rough bark of liberty." "You cannot know," replied the wall. That's all for this week's World Traveler. I'm Leah Blackman for the Virginia Voice. This program is also available on demand at www.virginiavoice.org.